We'd Like a Word.
Welcome back to part two of this episode of We'd Like a Word on designing book covers with me, Paul Waters.
And me, Stephen Colgan.
And our guest is the renowned Mark Ecob, who you may know as Mecob, M-E-C-O-B.
He's a portmanteau.
Yeah, that's right. It's like your Beyonce and whoever that guy is she's married to, I've forgotten.
Yeah, Jay-Z, yeah.
Or maybe they, are they?
You know, I take that as a compliment, thanks.
Or Brangelina, that's the one I'm thinking.
Brangelina.
Yes, sir. Yeah. A question for you, Mark. I know when you were designing the cover for me for Black Water Town, I wanted to stand out a little bit, but I also wanted to fit in. So one of the things, I guess, with genre fiction, there are tropes that probably bore you to death and you're sick of them, but people pick up a book and they think, oh yeah, there's the silhouetted figure walking away from the camera, the viewer, and you know it's a thriller, crime, something like that, like Jack Reacher or James Patterson or Jeffrey Archer. So you think, oh, okay, this is what I know. This is the sort of thing I like. And the variation of mine was, he wasn't in the middle, he was beside a river. So that's okay, slightly different, but fitting into the thing, which was, and I was happy with that because I thought, okay, people who like that sort of thing will know to go there. Is that, is there too much of that? Is it a straight jacket? Does it bore you to death? Do you think, oh God, I'm not one of those?
I think it's fine. A designer who will remain nameless, who I hold in very high esteem, spoke of these genre questions like fast food. And he said, you know, there's fast food design and there's gourmet design. Everyone likes a burger every now and then. So yes, I do genre work because there's room for it in the landscape of cover design. Yes, I do highly literary stuff where it's, you know, very minimal and arty and stuff. I do the lot, and it's actually really rewarding to do both alongside each other. Although it can get tiring if you get pigeonholed. I'm lucky enough to do a bit of everything. I'm a bit of a jack of all trades, which is a gift. But I was actually chatting to a good friend yesterday regarding kind of, you know, you're a couple of decades into your career and having a creative holiday. But that person was just sick of doing crime fiction. He's like, I'm done. What do I do? They've been doing it for so long and been known for it that, and they have to pay the bills. Just take a break. Go back, look at it differently, push yourself here, try expanding yourself there, or just say no if you can. So it can bother you. I think it doesn't necessarily bother me because I've got a really real good variance in what I work.
I suppose I'm thinking it's a bit like wanting to both stand out and fit in.
Yeah.
And that there's an interesting tension there.
Oh, sure. And a tension more so probably if you're an independent author making all the decisions for yourself. You know, it's an age-old question. Do you follow or fit in? And that applies to every other media that... You know, we all consume music and stuff. It's, you know, do you like cut and paste hero movies or do you like art house kind of French, you know, multilingual stuff? It's, there's room for both. And I really don't have a thing against it. Trends end as well. I mean, that same designer I was talking about with the food reference, they also said that trends end.
What are the trends?
Slides, as I recall. It's a really good question. And I'm going to say I ignore it. That's kind of controversial. I don't tend to spend a great deal of time in bookshops at the moment because I'm just trying to do my own thing. That's just part of my journey as a designer where I am. I get a little bit sick of looking at so many trends that carry on. There's a big trend in the last sort of 12 months of othering ethnically specific, generally female characters on fiction. And everything became sort of wafty colors and clean illustration and kind of slab serif typography. And that's had its course, even though it's beautifully original 5 minutes ago. I've done my share of that. So have other designers. If you want to follow as an author. If you don't want to do something original, do that. I mean, each single author I know and the books that they produced are on their own journey. They might know everything on book one or on book 10. You know, I mean, Stephen, you spoke earlier about doing quite a few books, and I bet you've learned loads as you've gone.
Oh God, yes, yeah, absolutely.
The outs, yeah. And the goods and the bads, and listening and not listening. It's horses for courses. So I really don't think there's a silver bullet for your question.
No, but I quite like the food analogy because, funnily enough, when people are talking about how good something is, food often comes up as an analogy because they say, you know, somewhere like McDonald's and somewhere like, you know, Heston Blumenthal, the Fat Duck. They both have their own different measures of quality because they're hitting different parts of the market. Because, you know you can go into a McDonald's anywhere in the world and the menu will be pretty much the same, and the stuff will taste the same, and it'll have the same sort of corporate look. And so the measure of their success is corporacy, whereas the measure of success for the Fat Duck is being innovative.
I do a lot of commissioning as an art director as well, and I work with the designers that do specifically commercial work, and they do that so well. It's an art unto itself. And I work also with designers that will just come back with the most left field unexpected design, because they're all about the concept and not really about market. They coexist perfectly well. I don't have anything against either.
What do you think of this one? So this one is Dark Pines.
Will Dean.
By Will Dean, which is a book I really like. I would recommend. Yep. But I like the cover. I like bold, kind of simple covers. But this one, so it's half the cover is black, half the cover is white. So it says the word dark on the black bit and then pines on the white bit. But the dark bit is not just a slab of color. It's a Swedish forest.
Uh-huh.
And then the white bit is snow, and there's a little car and a trail of blood. That struck me as clever. It's the book is set in a forest, so it conveys a lot.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
I think it's a beautiful piece of work. I know the designer that does it. Can I name drop? Am I allowed to do
Please
that?
Do.
Mark Swan. He goes by Kid Ethic.
Kid Ethic, yeah.
And just one of the best designers I know. And that specific cover you're talking about, if you look closely, there's a body that's being dragged from the edge of the car.
Very clever.
The kind of dark, light thing you're talking about not only reflects in the story, but riffs on the title. It all just molds together in a really lovely piece of communication from copy to the design.
And you like it even more once you know the story.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you don't need to know the story.
And that's crime fiction, but it doesn't have a running man on it. It doesn't have a car skidding. I just want to defend those designers that do beautiful genre work to a brief, and they succeed and bring that author to the masses. It's really not about snobbery or anything like that. Yeah, you're showing me the Ben Okri work.
Here's another one. This is Ben Okri's latest one, Tiger Work. So I interviewed him about this recently.
What did he think?
It's a bit psychedelic in a way, lots of swirling. It says Ben Okri, Tiger Work. The color of the cover changes from fluorescent green down to purple and red, and lots of swirling. Mm. It's quite complicated. It's beautiful, though.
That's really stunning. I mean, there's another series by Ben Okri, designed by a guy called Kishan Rajani for Faber, I think it was, maybe a year or so ago, which was just stunning. Same author, but really rich in style, where the typography ran at kind of 90 degrees as a frame around a central square illustration. You can catch it on abcoverd.com, which is the Academy of British Cover Design. If you look in 2021, you'll see the winners. And Ben Okri's work, it was another case of kind of avoiding othering. I mean, I remember watching a talk by Kishan, the designer, at the St. Bride's Print Library, and we was talking about the approach that Faber took to it. And he's a designer of colour, which is absolutely brilliant to see him working on that project. Well executed and sold brilliantly. And it was, each one had an identity of its own over a series in a coherent way as well. I mean, you know, Ben Okri's books are beautiful anyway. I've only read a few.
It's by, this is a small hardback. And the illustration is by Yeren Tong.
Yeren Tong, yep. She did, if you recall, a couple of brilliant covers by Michelle Faber for Canongate about 8-9 years ago, which won a V&A Illustration Award. Worth checking out. Yeren Tong, brilliant portfolio.
So, Mark, here's a question and a question I don't know the answer to, but of all the people I can think of who could answer it, probably you. If we go back to the slightly olden days when most people bought the records in record shops, a striking cover would jump out at you. With a lot of people buying the stuff online now from, you know, Waterstones or Amazon or whatever it is, you get the smallest little image of the cover.
Mm-hmm.
How important is it that cover, even at that scale, jumps out at people? And does that drive people to buy? Because a lot of people, when they go to websites, they go to the website knowing what they're going to buy. That's the point. Yeah. They're not browsing. They go there with I'm going on to Amazon because I want to buy this new book by Will Dean or whatever.
I saw a tweet from a designer a few years ago now who said, I'm an Amazon thumbnail designer. Welcome to my day. I think it was having a particularly challenging one. Yes, it's a factor in some briefs, but I don't spend my time thinking about what something looks like a thumbnail. For a very, very large conglomerate who will remain nameless, part of their process is to ask for stuff presented at thumbnail size. How's it looking, grayscale and an older Kindle, for example? Some clients of mine ask for that in triplicate, and we consider it in real depth. You know, is there enough contrast in a grayscale cover? Does it work at scale? All that kind of thing. But most actually don't give it that much consideration. I don't know if that's because my work naturally works at that scale, or that it's, like you say, Stephen, the psychology behind how people buy is much more of a decision pre-seeing the thumbnail. You know, I'm working with an independent on a franchise right now based around an animal. And, you know, the character itself has to be really super clear in all of the branding. So it has to be on the website header. It needs to work on merchandise. You know, the concept for the cover needs to roll out over everything else. So clarity is key in that, in the way that you approach something like that. But, you know, to your example, Paul, the Ben Okri one you just showed me, the colors weren't particularly contrasting. There was a book a few years ago called Quiet. How do you represent that one on Amazon? So they had to sort of fudge it and put a faux kind of shadow on there, that kind of thing. But the book still went out. It still sold thousands. It wasn't to do with the name of the author, I don't think, although I may be wrong there. So in my process, it's important you think about it. If a client asked me to consider it at thumbnail, you know, the Alexander McCall Smith series I did and the Ian Banks series I did for the same publisher, I was always thinking about the spines, for example. How did they work together?
Yeah, because the author's name quite often is a major selling point, obviously.
Sure.
And when you've got someone who's got a particularly long name, let's say Benedict Cumberbatch brought out a book, I mean, that's an awful lot of letters to fit across the page, which are going to be very, very, very small on a thumbnail. So you've almost got to make them super huge because that's the selling point rather than any artwork, I suppose, really.
That's why you have to be called Brad Thor.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Will Dean.
I don't know if you guys have heard of Paul Kingsnorth.
Yes.
He did a book called The Wake with
Cumberbatch. The Wake, yeah. A great book.
Four-letter first name like yours, Paul. And then Kingsnorth as a surname. And I was sitting there going, what do I do with this? Particularly in paperback. So I tried something where I split his name into two. So Kings and kind of a Snorth, and stacked his name over three lines. You can see it on a book called Beast. The cover is beige with red typography on it. It was published by Faber in a small format hardback. I commissioned some illustration for it from an Alino cut artist called Baked Bagel Boy, of all the names, which was a guy falling with a stomach on fire. It's quite simple and it sounds gruesome, but it was beautifully illustrated with lots of space. And his name, Paul, is full banner at the top, and then Kings and then North. So it bled off the right-hand cover, right-hand side of the cover, and then bled on the left and on the line below. So it read nicely. And then that got picked up by Creative Review, which was like a huge achievement for me. It's the
big thing.
You know, it's a design periodical. It's like, Mom, I'm in Creative Review. And I think it was simply because of that device. So I took a challenge. I was like, you can't change your name because your name's your name, to our earlier discussion, and made it an opportunity. And it worked over two, three books.
If it wasn't for you, Mark, Paul Kingsnorth would now be known as Paul King.
Paul Kings or Snorth. I mean, who wants to be called Snorth?
Who wants to be called Paul King?
But do you know, with more thought about sustainability in the book industry, is there any place for mass market hardbacks anymore? And is there any place for things like foil on it, which makes it much more difficult to recycle?
Good question. And it's something that I struggled with when you said we'd be speaking about sustainability. I think that, and I have to be kind of brutal with it. I mean, I never make a mistake like Martin Dory, No More Plastic in the US. And the book had just a cup on the front. It was printed sustainably on approved paper. And then the publisher decided to shrink wrap it and send it out, a book about saving plastic. And I mean, what kind of joined up thinking is that? So there's the odd clanger in book publishing, but the production people that I work with on a regular basis, quite closely, they all source sustainably paper-wise. I mean, that's just a standard now, FSC everywhere, which is great. Things like foiling, I'm not familiar with the recycling behind it. You could argue there's enough books in the world, but I don't spend my time losing sleep over what finish I use. And that might be environmental apathy. It might not be being in touch. But I just don't think about whether a foil is going to be recycled or not. Maybe that's me being wrapped up in a rather noble pursuit of cover design of books.
Society of Authors is looking at more. They've got their sustainability committee. Mm-hmm. And Piers Tordé is trying to push it and not necessarily have books that are absolutely recyclable and 100% recycled paper and that sort of thing, but trying to make everyone better than they are now. And foil seems what is one of the villains they talk about, because it means it's not recyclable at all. But I wonder about hardbacks. I suppose you'd be sad if hardbacks disappeared.
My profession has weathered things like financial crashes and pandemics and the ebooks that was gonna kill what we do. And we're still alive and we're still publishing hardbacks like there's no tomorrow. It's a format people still buy, people appreciate in its art form. It's still a real love for the product. I suppose when you get an FSC logo on the back, you feel a bit better about it. But no, there's no sort of format-led changes that are linked to sustainability in my immediate experience.
I would have thought paper is more than ebooks and electronic book readers and mobile phones and everything else anyway. Sure. If I remember correctly from my QI days, isn't the M1 built on millions of Mills and Boone paperbacks?
Amazing.
I'm pretty sure if you look it up, I might have to have a look in a minute. I'm pretty sure that they had millions of them that were being pulped, and they actually turned them into a surface that could actually sandwich as part of the drainage system under the M1.
On that note, we're at the end of part two of this episode of We'd Like a Word, talking about book cover design with me, Paul Waters.
And me, Stephen Colgan.
And our special guest, Mark Ecob. Join us for part three.